all about a swimming pool.
Did I move it?
Is that recording here?
Yes.
Grant me strength to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change, and the wisdom to know the difference. So like I said, my name is Calvin, I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is June 23rd, 2021. It's Friday day. I pretty much lost count. But I have 850 days today. I can honestly say, man, I am living the dream as a result of the work I've done in Alcoholics Anonymous and continue to do. And, you know, it wasn't always like that. You know, so I'm 32 now, and, you know, young is defined as anybody with room to grow, so that qualifies all of them. So come on and join us, second Sunday of every month, 2 o'clock, Sierra Fellowship. And, you know, I started coming into the rooms when I was 18 years old. I'm 32 now, just almost, I got 2 years and 4 months, and, you know, it's been a lot of ups and downs, right? I've always been trying to avoid this AA thing. I thought it was a bunch of mumbo jumbo, and it wasn't for me, and I tried every way possible to get around it, you know, just hoping and hope that I wasn't a real alcoholic, and, but I'm glad that I've done it now. You know, I'm fired up for recovery. Every day is a barn burner. And it's just living a dream, you know? And, so originally I grew up in Bakersfield, California. And, you know, from the outside looking in, you know, there wasn't any to a upper middle class family. You know, even though I was raised by my grandparents, you know, my mom was always in the picture. never knew who my dad was, but. You know, that never really bothered me. You know, I just was just, you know, just being raised by my grandparents. It was great, you know? And, but I can remember as far back as I can remember. You know, I always had this, like, this ease about me, you know, this sense of, like, overwhelming fear and just, like, anxiety. You know, I was so worried about what everybody thought of me. You know, I just never felt like I quite fit in. And, I would go looking for, like, an escape from that, all sorts of things, you know, escape from the current reality that I had, you know, whether it was video games or sports, or just, like, getting lost in my imagination with Hot Wheels and Legos, you know, whatever it was, anything I could, like, even though my reality wasn't bad, like, for some reason, I just wanted to escape it, as long as I was growing up, you know, and I remember, like, growing up, you know, I just always, like, felt like, it's never felt apart. I just felt like I was on the outside looking in, and I just always felt like that, you know, that somehow I was different, you know. And I remember the very first thing I ever tried was something besides alcohol, but, you know, I remember, like, I tried that for the first time, and I was just like, oh, this is it. This is great. How do we do more? And that carried on in the rest of my life, you know. It didn't matter what form of alcohol it was. I always had the same reaction. This is great. Here's all my money. Where do we get more? And it was just like that always. You know, I never drank like any of the people I was around. You know, I remember being in high school, you know, like 13, 14, 15, or all of high school, right? You know, I remember just like, you know, everyone else was like getting trashed off of like one or two beers. Like, I wanted to drink a whole 12 pack. We don't want to hang out with you anymore, man. You're an alcoholic. You know, here I am, 15 years old, and I got other 15-year-olds telling me I'm an alcoholic. But yeah, man, he's coming out of the party, you know? And I continue just to live that lifestyle, right? Just to continue to progress. You know, I remember, like, you know, the weekend party started to trickle into the week. You know, all of a sudden, like, I was drinking on Monday after school. And then all of a sudden I was drinking Monday and Tuesday after school. And all of a sudden I was drinking Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday after school. All of a sudden I realized, wow, school would probably be a whole lot better if I was drunk. And so I started drinking before I went to school. And then I was like, what am I doing at school, man? I should be out drinking somewhere and causing havoc. Forget this school stuff. And that's just the way it progressed really fast from a really young age, you know? And that just continued to follow me. It just continued to progress. The lifestyle, you know, I just loved, like, living life on the edge. And I just felt like, you know, I just felt like, I just felt like I felt like I had happiness, peace, and serenity. And so I continued to chase that in the bottle, you know? And it wasn't until shortly after high school, you know, I somehow, I have no idea, I graduated high school. And, you know, I started to get involved with, you know, a whole lot of alcohol and a whole lot of other things. And a whole lot of crime and violence and gangs and just everything ever entailed, you know. And I remember I ended up going to treatment for the first time. You know, I ended up stealing a whole bunch of money from my parents. And they finally confronted me on it, and they were like, "Where'd all this money go?" You know? And instantly I was like, "I've been drinking and I can't stop." I just blurted that out, you know, thinking that was going to be like an excuse to get me out of trouble, you know? And next thing you know, I was in the car and I was heading to detox. And I had no idea what that was, you know? I remember, like, I was in a relationship at the time, and all it really was like, we just drink the same, and we just, like, do all the things together the same, you know? And it was one of those, like, really, like, unhealthy things where, like, and it just, like, became a cycle where, like, I go to detox, and she go to detox, too. I go to rehab, and then she go to rehab, too. She go to rehab, and then I go to rehab, too. You know? Like, and then, like, we'd be sober, and, like, one day I'd be like, "Do you want to get high?" And, you know? And she'd be like, "That's good, you know?" And then the other way around, too. It was just, like, a sick, unhealthy, like, codependent, just wreaking havoc in everyone's lives relationship, you know? So I remember I went to treatment for the first time, and I never, ever heard of AA at 12 steps. I never even knew there was things since rehab. You know, the scene was like what you see in movies where, like, people sit in a circle talking about their feelings, you know, and there's like talking notes in the background. And I remember I showed up to my first, I was at this treatment center, and it was one of those really fancy ones where, like, they give you a $50,000 big book and they take you to the mannequins at night. And you sit around and just smoke cigarettes all day, and, like, everybody's, like, hooking up with each other, and it's just co-ed, and it's, like, in this little house in this neighborhood. And, like, it was one of those really fancy ones, you know. I remember I went to AA, and I was just like, "This is cool, man. This is cool, too." And then I started to go, you know, and I was going, and I realized, like, I started to, you know, I would hear these people share at meetings, and, like, I would hear them share, and then everybody would be clapping for them after they share, you know? And so I was like, "Oh, man, I want people to clap for me." So I just started repeating exactly what I heard everybody else saying, but I wouldn't get the clap. So screw these people, man. I'm out of here, man. They don't like me, man. Why can't I be part of the club, you know? And but at least because they realized, like, I only had like 11 days sober, and I was at a treatment program, and they were like, "You just repeated what the last guy said," you know. But I thought, like, it's not good, you know. And anyway, so, like, I went to the treatment center, and I was convinced, my family was convinced, everybody around me was convinced that, like, that was going to cure me, and I was never going to use alcohol or anything else in the rest of my life. Well, lo and behold, that's not the way it works. Well, for most of us. Well, if you're in this room, that's not the way it works. And so, you know, I would go to these 30-day treatment centers, and then all of a sudden I'd be out for 30 days, and I'd do all right for 30 days. And then all of a sudden, like, that insane idea would creep in where I was like, I can just have one. And then it would just start the cycle all over again, you know? And that became like a revolving door, you know? My parents would send me out to treatment for 30 days, I get out for 30 days, I get drunk for 30 days, I go back to treatment for 30 days, and then I get out for 30 days, and then I get drunk for 30 days, and I go back for 30 days. And that, like, 18, 19, even, like, up until only a 90-day cycle, you know? But, like, the whole time, even when they were taking me to AA, like, I just was thoroughly convinced that, like, I didn't belong here, that it was for all the old people in there, and that, like, you know, and I just didn't need it. I thought I was terminally unique, you know? And slowly but surely, you know, my alcoholism just continued to progress, right? Then it started to be, you know, I don't know if there's any alcohol in the room, but you guys really did me dirty, you know? And my grandma started going to Al-Anon. And then all of a sudden, there was no more, like, letting me be there and get drunk. All of a sudden, the door was locked. My grandma would, like, I'd knock on the door, and my grandma would look through the window, and then she would, like, the door would open just enough for her to, like, throw a sandwich out on the front porch, and just... Sometimes it would have, like, a business card with a rehab attached to it, you know? And... And I'd be like, oh man, the Valentine's. And still, you know, like, I still thought that, like, somehow, someday, I was going to be able to control the drug I was drinking. I thought that if I just, like, continued, that it was just always about it in my head, where I thought if I just lined everything up around me perfectly, if I got a car, got a job, got an apartment, maybe move cities or whatever it was, you know, then I'll be all right, you know, but I'm going to do that AA thing. I'm not going to do any of those other fellowships they would take me to. And also, I mean, at the time, I know, no, I'm definitely not rolling, I work for cocaine and alcohol, but other substances are definitely a part of my story. And in the early days there, when I was at that age, you know, I was doing a lot of other stuff than really drinking. So I was convinced I wasn't even an alcoholic. I thought I was these other things, you know? And so I thought that's what would always happen. You know, every time I had relapse, I'd start drinking first. But in my head, I'm like, I just have to peek out of the window after being awake for 5 days, you know, and all that kind of stuff. But I was convinced I wasn't an alcoholic. Yet, you know, every time I drank, I lost control of my drinking, and every time I ever started again from sobriety, I always drank first. So once I finally, you know, I started going to Al-Anon, and all of a sudden I was living on the streets, and, you know, just couch surfing, going from, like, one shady trap house to another, and all of a sudden, like, as things progressed, all of a sudden I started to go to jail a whole lot more, and, you know, and I realized that I was starting to, like, tear my family apart because, you know, my grandfather, God bless his heart, you know, he just thought that, like, if you sent me to the right treatment center, to the right doctors, and to the right psychiatrist, that, like, I should be healed, that I should be cured, and so, like, every time I would drink again, you know, he wouldn't even blame it on me. Laying on the rehab, that it's your fault. Like, how do you think you're supposed to cure him, you know? And then my grandma, though, she'd be, you know, she was going to Al-Anon. And she was like, you know, get rid of him, you know, don't talk to him, just cut him off completely. And so I would go to jail, and, like, I would call him, and my grandma answered, she wouldn't even answer. And then my grandpa answered, he'd be like, all right, give me like 8 hours, and I'll be up. But slowly but surely, like, that stopped too. And I remember in 2013 was the last time I ever went to jail, and it was the longest time I spent in jail as well. And it did exactly what it was supposed to do. I went to jail, and everybody in there was having a good old time, playing cards and working out and, like, you know, running game on their girlfriend on the phone to, like, stay with them and, like, send them money, and everybody was, like, making spreads, and they were having a good old time, you know, and I remember I was sitting around, I was like, this is not fun, this is not cool, you can't, you know, the drugs are really expensive, the alcohol's terrible, you know, and so, you know, all those other times when I was going to treatment, I was always going for the wrong reasons. I was always going because, like, I just wanted to get my family back on my side, I wanted to keep them from kicking me out. You know, I wanted to be able to keep the car that they were paying for me. You know, I didn't want my phone to get shut off or whatever it was. I was always going for, you know, and it didn't matter, like, what treatment center or what type of, like, psychiatrist or psychologist or whoever I went to, right? I always got the same exact answer from them. They said, you need to go to AA. You need to go to AA in those steps. And I'm like, no. And it was just sort of the same old thing, time after time. And in my head, I was thoroughly convinced that AA didn't work. I was like, I've been going to AA off and on for the last year. You know, but I wasn't doing anything except just sitting in the room, taking up a seat, and drinking all the coffee, and smoking all the cigarettes of all the people there, because I didn't have any. But I never did AA, even though they always took me, you know? And so in 2013, I just got out of jail, or I was in jail, I got out of the ankle monitor, and I was at this, like, really grimy, sober living home that was, like, just really, like, the guy was just using pay money off the state, pretty much. There was 40 guys in this 5-bedroom house, and it sucked. Anyway, so, like, at that point, I remember that was, like, I started to go to AA, like, on my own a little bit, just because I wanted to get away from there, and I didn't know where else to hang out. My family didn't want anything to do with me. I was on this ankle monitor, like, I couldn't, like, go within, like, a certain distance of the sober living, but there just happened to be the central office, like, within that distance, and I remember I was going over there, like, every morning, and I was going there at noon, PM curfew. And so I was like going to AA, and I remember I got a sponsor, and I didn't even ask for him. He just like seen me with an ankle monitor and knew how to call your program, and he grabbed me and he was like, yeah, let's go to coffee, you know? And I was pretty much just using him to like smoke cigarettes and get free coffee and sometimes lunch. And but that like that was the first time I like really kind of like did a little bit more than I'd ever done before in AA, you know? And I remember I started to stay sober longer than I ever had before, though. Even though I was just doing the bare minimum, Like, I had this sponsor, I wasn't doing anything he told me to do. He would tell me to read the book, and I wouldn't read the book, and I just wasn't doing nothing, you know? But, like, I was just going to meetings, but, like, all of a sudden, like, I was staying sober longer than 30 days. Like, all of a sudden, I had, like, 60 or 90 days, and I ended up getting the ankle monitor off, too, you know? And, though, now looking back on it, I realized, like, wow, like, maybe that has something to do with me staying sober that long, you know, the fact that I was just there, right? But the thing is, though, like, meetings will, for a guy like me, meetings will only keep me sober for so long doing the work. And so I remember in 2013, I got the ankle monitor off, and then I ended up relapsing and getting, as soon as I got it off, like, a week later, I was getting drunk again. And, you know, my family back on my side and all this stuff. But the thing was, though, like, that whole, like, year, that jail experience, like, it did something for me. Like, it made me realize that, like, if I continued doing the lifestyle that I was doing, if I continued drinking, that I was just going to end up right back in there and end up probably doing all day like some of those guys are. And that kind of, like, scared me. I was like, nah, dude, that's not the way I want to live, you know? And so I ended up, finally seeking out treatment on my own. But the thing is, though, all that money for those fancy rehabs, that was all burned up. There was no more fancy rehabs. I remember my parents took me and dropped me off at the rescue mission once in Bakersfield, and I was like, nope, not going to happen. And then I remember I went to Teen Challenge twice, and I was like, nope, not going to happen. And then I remember I finally talked that 30-day treatment center into, like, letting me back. But they told me, they were like, we'll let you come here just long enough to detox, and then you're going to go to Salvation Army. And I remember I got the Salvation Army program, and they were going to take my EBT card and make me work for free. And so I remember the first day I was there, I was like, nope, not going to happen. But I had this, like, plan, right? I was going to go live with my girlfriend. I'm going to go get a job. I'm going to go to AA. I'm going to go eat. So I had, like, all these great intentions in my head, this great thinking of this great plan of what I was going to do. And then, like, as soon as I got there, I was drinking. And all that plan went out the window, you know? And then I continued to, like, live on the streets for a little bit longer, and it really, really, really got bad, you know? All of a sudden, I found myself in a whole lot of, like, really bad situations. You know, I'm lucky to be alive today, and I'm lucky to have not been caught up in the mix of some of the things that I've been a part of or seen. And, but I know now that it's God with me all the time. My higher power is looking out for me. And so I remember I ended up going to Salvation Army. I went back to Salvation Army. And this time I ended up staying. But here's what happened, though. I had this idea. I was like, well, if all those 30-day programs didn't cure me, I bet 6 months will. Six-month programs, gotta do it, you know? So I went to this six-month program in Bakersfield, and I don't know if anyone's familiar with the program. Like, there, to successfully complete a program, you have to get a sponsor, and you have to work up to a step four, and you have to go to 5 meetings a week. And on your meeting slip, there's a spot where you have to have your sponsor sign saying you guys met, the date and the time and everything. And so I remember I ended up getting a sponsor just for the fact that I had to. And but the thing is, though, like, all the other 5 meetings, like, I would just sign out and forge it myself. And then, like, I would work with the sponsor, and I wasn't doing anything he asked me to, and, like, I wasn't being honest with him. And because I was convinced I didn't need to do any of that. I was convinced that just going to treatment for 6 months, that was going to cure me, you know? And then I ended up completing that program. And then 2 days later, I was drinking. And I was like, what the heck, dude? Like, and so I ended up completing, anyway, just to speed it up a little bit, right? You know, I ended up, like, going back. So now, all of a sudden, like, in those 30-day treatment cycles, all of a sudden, like, it became a 6-month treatment cycle. And I ended up going back to Salvation Army, like, 3 or 4 months later. And this time I got a sponsor, and I worked up to the third step. But the thing was, though, like, I was still just, like, running amok, you know. I was forging half of my meetings, you know, like, I would, like, forge my sponsorship meetings, you know, and I was being really totally dishonest, you know, and in our book, it tells us, right, that, you know, our chances are less than average unless we can be rigorous and honest, right, unless I can develop a life of, you know, rigorous honesty. And, you know, I was continuing just to be deceitful and dishonest and shady, and, you know, in reality, nothing had changed about me at all. Like, I was just sober. Still the same exact person. And now looking back on it, what I've learned now as a result of working the program is that, you know, it's not drugs and alcohol, those are I am the problem. Right? The problem is the person who looks back at me in the mirror, right? They're always my solution. And what I've been able to learn about this program is that, like, it's about changing my behaviors, a change of attitude, and a change of heart. I didn't know that at the time, you know? And anyway, so like that 6 month treatment cycle just became a cycle again. You know, I'd go for 6 months, and the second time I went, you know, I thought they offered me a job to work there when I did the program. I was like, oh great, that's gonna do, that's the answer. I'll work in a rehab. I work in a rehab. Well, I'll tell you what, yes, you can. I remember I worked there for like 9 months, I worked there for like 5 months after I graduated that program. And I remember, like, the day before I was going to get a year, it was the longest I'd ever stayed sober. I had 364 days, you know? And I'd gotten this, like, $30 bonus from working there, and I used that to go buy a bottle. Like, I was going to reward myself for getting a year. And, but I was fairly convinced that I was just only going to drink once, just that weekend, you know? And then it just continued to progress, you know? And then all of a sudden, you know, I decided to head down to Southern California. I moved out to the Inland Empire, Riverside, Paris. I don't know if anybody knows where Paris is. I don't remember where it was. I lived in a couple of France. But I ended up in Paris, California, and it's like it's a desert wasteland almost, just surrounded by warehouses. And I was at this treatment center, and I was thoroughly convinced this is the answer. I just got to get out of Asia. Then I can stay sober. But once again, right, it's that insane idea of how I'm going to control and enjoy my drink. Same idea of how it's going to be different this time. You know, still the whole time, right, all these programs, whether it was, it didn't matter what type of program it was, year-long, faith-based, 6 months, 90-day probation, fancy, not fancy, whatever it was, right, they always took, I always ended up back in AA. They always made me go to AA, they always took me to AA, and I was always thinking that, like, nah, dude, like, this, I need that, don't take me there. And they'd be like, no, you need this. You need this. If anything, these other people don't. You do. And I'm like, man, you're being mean. And it really hurt my feelings, you know? And so anyway, right, I went down to Riverside, trying to speed it up here, right, I want to get to the solution. There I am in Riverside, and guess what? There's alcohol and everything else, just in Riverside. And that wasn't the answer either, you know? You know, and that just became a cycle, right? I ended up getting another job, working in rehab, and then I kind of got a sponsor, I kind of worked some steps, but then all of a sudden, like, I just got complacent. You know, all of a sudden, like, I did a half a four step, and I remember I felt, like, a little glimmer of hope, though, and, but then, like, all of a sudden, I thought I didn't need to work any more of the steps, but I just continued to drink, you know? And then something happened, you know, I ended up, I don't know if anyone knows anything about, like I said, the Salvation Army programs, basically a product of that place, but it saved my life and introduced me to the solutions. And, you know, I've done that program 8 times in my lifetime, and I've worked for them. I think it's the only place on the earth that will fire you 3 times for getting loaded and drunk on the job and then hire you back. But, so this one time, I was in Riverside, I've seen a guy there in the program that I'd been in the program with like 2 years earlier. And I remember going together, I couldn't stand him. I was like, get that guy away from me, I don't want to be that guy. But then I seen him again, here I am back at day one, and I seen him, he was leading one of the meetings on site. Yeah, for H&I, and I was like, what the heck? He had something I wanted. You know, every time I ever picked a sponsor before, I'd always look for the guy that had either, like, a brand new BMW or a lifted truck and owned a business, and, like, I'm like, yeah, the other guy, you know, that guy can give me meetings, he can give me a job, you know, I'm going to get that guy as a sponsor. But this time I seen him, And I seen something different that I wanted. You know, he had like this peace and this joy, and like, he was laughing, and he seemed so like comfortable in his own skin. And I remember I was like, and it blocked out all the things I originally thought about him. I was like, oh my gosh, that looks good. I'm so mad. And I remember after the meeting, I walked up to him, and I was like, hey man, like, I was like, how do I get this? I want this. And he's like, well, you're going to have to do what I do. And I was like, okay, well, what do you do? And then he was like, well, you know, I trust God to come out and work with others. And I go to AA and work with others and be honest and get on our knees and we pray and all this stuff. And I was like, oh, and but thankfully, I was just desperate enough where I was like, okay, what do I do? You know? And then he started giving me some instructions. And I started like following. He would come like, he was there like all the time. We would go to meetings, me and like two other guys at the program. And, you know, I started to like really work the program, you know? You know, I actually ended up working a 4-step. And, you know, all of a sudden, like, I started to feel like really good about myself, you know? And I remember, like, you know, I was there in the program and I was still kind of being shady and grimy, you know? I'd forge a meeting here and there, you know? And, like, I would have contraband in my locker. And I was being honest, you know, I was being deceitful. But, you know, the thing was, I was actually doing this program and doing what was suggested, you know, and my life started going like, good, you know? And I remember even, like, I remember that was, like, the first time I ever heard my grandma tell me, like, she stopped one time and she came to pick me up for pass, and she was like, what about you, you know? And, but, you know, I started to get the results. Like, I was really trying to work the program, and I was just following the instructions. And then I remember at the end of that, I ended up being offered another job with Salvation Army. But this was in San Jose, the Salvation Army in San Jose. And I remember, like, it was doing exactly what I love to do. It was managing the kitchen there. And I love to cook. I love and I love working with alcoholics, you know. And I ended up taking that job and... I remember my sponsor and a couple other people I respected in the program, they were like, why are you going to pick up and leave what you've created here, right? This fellowship, this what you have going on here, and you're going to go right back and do the same thing you've always done. You're going to go right back to the same job, the same place. Maybe sure, it might be somewhere different, but then you're going to have to start all over from scratch. But then I remember there was this this other gentleman in the program. He was the one that I actually did my I don't know why, but like I didn't end up doing my 5th step with the guy that led me through my 4th step. I did with this other guy in the program because there was just some things that like I don't know. I felt more comfortable telling him everything. I told him everything, you know. Telling me, he said, Calvin, if you apply the same principles of the program you applied here there, you're going to be just fine. I was like, yeah, that makes sense. So I ended up going to San Jose, and instantly I hit the ground running. You know, I got a sponsor. And I got involved with H&I, and I got involved with secondary mission speaker meetings, Saturday nights, barn burner, you know, and I got some commitments there. And I just got really plugged into the program, and I started to say, and I was good. You know, I was sober, I was doing good. And then this was back in 2019, so we know what was coming next, right? Then all of a sudden, like, COVID hit. I'm living in the Bay Area, COVID hit, and I had some sponsees, and I had these commitments, and... I used COVID as a really good excuse to stop doing everything. Like, it was really easy for me just to shelter in place, isolate at home. You know, I'm meeting these people, I go to meetings and all this stuff, you know? And I didn't adapt quick enough to, like, the way the program was evolving at that time, right? When it was starting to go virtual and Zoom and all that stuff. And instantly, dude, I started to work the steps in reverse. All of a sudden, I was working the steps in reverse. And as I started to work the steps in reverse, I get closer and closer to the game. You know, I need to get really spiritually sick. You know, I was isolated. I was by myself. I wasn't meeting with any sponsors anymore. I wasn't doing any of the things that were keeping me sober at that point. And at that and I remember it was like 2 days before 4:20 that I woke up. It was a Sunday morning. I woke up, and there wasn't anything wrong in my life. You know, like, everything was good. And instantly, I woke up, and I thought, just drinking, play video games a little bit, maybe, you know, maybe go smoke some of that legal stuff here in California. And she'd be all right. But all the while, I've been working at a rehab, and I'm even living on site. And so I started to get drunk and some other things while living there and working. And I remember, like, I was thoroughly convinced that it was going to be different. And I remember, like, you know, I had this, now I really had a head full of AA. I had a really, my head was full of AA, you know. And I remember that as soon as I took that first drink and put it back, I was like, oh no, what have I done? I wasn't going to enjoy it. And I couldn't enjoy it at all. And I was just so overwhelmed with this guilt and the shame, pride. You know, I didn't want to tell anybody. I didn't want to, like, sober. I was going to lose my job. I was going to lose where to live. I wasn't going to have anywhere to go. And I was going to be super expensive to live there. I could never afford to live there. And all these things. And I remember I continued to drink and some other things for a whole month while I was living and working there, you know? And I remember finally after a month, you know, I remember, like, I was trying to stop. Like, I was just trying to stop with my own power, you know? And I can remember, like, I was in one of the company vehicles, and I was out doing something. And, like, I had just, like, pulled up to a liquor store and got a bottle. But then I was so conflicted, I, like, threw it out the window. I was driving, and I'm banging on those steering wheel. I'm like, God, please help me, God. Please help me, God. Please help me, you know? And I remember I didn't end up drinking that day as I asked God to help me. And I remember I went back home, and, you know, I got on Zoom and went to a meeting, and then I got a commitment on a Zoom meeting, and, like, I started to do the program again. I started to stay sober. But God definitely answered my prayer that day. And, you know, I started to stay sober. But the thing is, though, I was lying about my sobriety. Nobody knew I started drinking again. Nobody knew, and I wanted to keep it that way, you know? I thought that if I just, like, got involved in the program again, that after a while, I would just forget about it, too. Like, it never happened. And, but all the while, like, so I got, like, another, like, 90 days just working the program and doing all the things again. You know, I started to meet with people on Zoom. I started to meet with people, like, I started to meet with my sponsor again. We would just pull up to a Starbucks and we'd get these little camping chairs and we'd just post up at the tailgate of this truck and run around and read a book, you know. But the whole time I'm lying about my sobriety day. Still working at this rehab, still living at this rehab. And, you know, and anyways, I ended up drinking again. And at this point, I was like, okay, well, you know, like, I'm just going to have to be honest about it. Like, the guilt and the shame was so bad. You know, that I went to my sponsor, and I just told him it all, and I told him about how worried I was about, you know, about losing my job, and I was having nowhere to live, and all this stuff. And he said, well, what if you just tell everybody involved the complete and honest truth and trust God to handle the rest? And I was like, or do this, you know? And he was just like, if you do anything besides what I'm telling you to do, don't ever call me again until you're ready, you know? And I was like, okay. So I went to my boss and I told him the complete truth. He asked me a bunch of questions about, did you ever drive vehicles drunk? Did you ever, you know, clients in the car when you were drunk? Did you ever? And I was like, yeah. You know, I was just being completely honest with him. And thankfully, he ended up letting me keep my job. He's like, I respect your honesty, you know? And they helped me find somewhere to live. But I trusted God, and I just was completely honest, you know? And then I just got busy with the program again. So when I do that, so the theme here, right, is when I don't do the program, life is a mess. My life's all messed up, I'm in a ton of pain, and I drink. When I do, it's how I'm in the big book. Trust God, clean house, work with others. My life is great, and I stay sober. And, well, anyways, you know, after a little bit, I got complacent again, and I ended up drinking. This was the end of 2020, December 2020, you know. This time I didn't drink, though, but I convinced myself that, like, I could do some of that other legal stuff in California. And but this time my pride got the best of me. I was like, I'm not going to confess to drinking and using again. I'm not going to do it. And so instead, it was, I put in my two-week notice at that job. And I thought that if I moved back to Bakersfield and just run from the relapse, that it would go away. But it doesn't. You know, I got to Bakersfield, and you know, I ended up getting a job, and you know, I was living at home with my parents, and I thought that, like, I was just going to go back to Bakersfield. Once again, I had all these great intentions and this great plan and this great idea in my head that it's going to be different this time. And you know, instantly I started drinking again. And this time, it was probably like the worst it had ever been in my life. You know, I was drinking like a half a handle a day. I was doing a whole bunch of other stuff. And, you know, like, I was in complete and total debt to everybody around me. And it was just all bad. You know, every day I couldn't stand the thought. I couldn't stand the thought of drinking anymore. But I couldn't stand the thought of being sober. So I was right in this, like, rock. I was right in this middle spot where, like, I didn't want to get sober, but I didn't want to drink anymore. It was like 127 pounds, 25 degrees in the summer of Bakersfield, Virginia. And I remember, like, I had all these empty bottles, you know, I don't know if you want to relate to this, right? I had, like, all these empty bottles stuffed in the seats of my car. And I had, like, this weed pipe and this bomb, and I'm scraping all the resin out. I'm getting this, I have this cup, and I'm trying to pour all the last drops out of all these empty bottles. I'm getting all the drops into a cup so I could just get something. And it was so pitiful, so demoralizing. And I remember I heard God, I know to this day it was the voice of God telling me, you know, I have something better for you. I have something better for you. I have something better for you. And it was like the first time I ever thought, like, and this, you know, a lot of times I'll hear people in the room just be like, oh yeah, I'm on step one. And I'm like, okay, well, I worked step one when I was sober. I worked step one that day when I was sitting in a hot car sweating, detoxing, shaking, puking on myself, trying to get some sense of relief, you know, but I knew it wasn't going to come because it wasn't coming anymore. It didn't matter if I had a gallon, nothing. The relief never came anymore. You know, it just alcohol stopped working. And so at that point, I realized, like, I can't stop. I can't stop. I can't get sober. Like, and I remember asking God, like, God, like, all I answered was, I need you to help me. And, like, it was at that moment, like, all of a sudden, like, I got this, like, sense of, like, relief. I felt like I finally, like, stopped fighting. And so, you know, one more time, I'm on the phone with Salvation Army, and I'm like, hey, you know, how can we forget? And I reached out to some people that were near and dear to my heart, these ministers and Salvation Army Riverside, and I was like, hey, you know, yeah, I mean, come back to the program. And they're like, huh? I was like, yeah, something. And they were like, well, you can't come back here at Riverside, but why don't you go to Florida? And they're like, you go to Fresno. Like, call them up, and like 30 minutes from now, I'm all over there. And so I ended up calling Fresno, and this was on a Thursday, and they said, be here next Tuesday. And I was like, no, I need to come like right now. Tuesday, that's a long, long time from now. So anyway, I ended up making it to Tuesday. I got to the program, and I remember the first night I was there was these guys that came in from H&I, you know, and they were yelling and screaming, and they were happy, and they were talking about all this crazy stuff, and everybody was yelling, the crowd was electric in the center, you know, there was like 91 guys there, and I was like, heck yeah, dude, that guy's going to be my sponsor, you know, because I had a little experience with the program before. I was like, man, if these guys are coming in and bringing meetings and sponsoring all these people, like, those are the guys I need to get around. Those are the real 12-steppers. Those are the guys that are really working the program. You know, and I ended up getting a sponsor, and he told me, he said, like, you know, he said it like this. He said, you're going to sit down, you're going to shut up, and if you ain't going to work the steps, get out of our way because we ain't got time for you. And I was like, all right, what's up? Let's do this, you know? And I just hit the ground running. You know, I was in the program. I was in treatment, and I did another 4-step, and this one was, like, the most thorough one I'd ever done. And, you know, I got busy with the men's list. And I remember, I'm sorry, but how much time do I have left? Oh, okay, great. So, speaking of, I ended up doing 4-step. I started making amends, and I have a sponsee that I got started on his amends list just this week. And, you know, I really started to think, you know, every time I take someone through the steps, it's like, I'm like reliving everything, you know? And, you know, I was telling him about how, like, you know, he just finished his 4-step, and you know, I could see something. The lights came on, and I was like, you know, in the 4-step, it seems like the magic happens, right? But for me and my experience, like, the real magic of the program happens in the events. You know, I remember I was in the program still, and I ended up going and making my sponsor was like, which amends on your list is going to be the one that you'll never, ever be able to do? Which one's the one that, like, you're just like, nope, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. And I told him, I was like, oh, this one, you know, this one right here. He's like, great, let's do that one first. And I ended up doing that one first. And it was a family member that I burned for like $5,000. And I didn't have a job. I was in the program still. And I remember I showed up there. I thought he was going to choke me out. He was like, yo, you owe me $5,000. Give me $5,000. He slammed the door in my face. And as soon as I got out of that program, this is my first job, my first check, I went over there with $100. And to this day now, it's the only payment in my entire life I've paid on time, continually, in my life. But now, like, you know, like, all the other ones after that were easy, you know? And I remember I ended up doing an inventory when I had, like, 18 months of sobriety almost, and that was just a really big fear's inventory, in sobriety, you know? And I remember my sponsor telling me, like, don't you realize that all of these fears you have are connected to all your unmade amends? And I was like, huh. And so I ended up, like, going back and forth. I drove 1,200 miles, and I made 9 different amends to, you know, well, the ex-girlfriend I called, but I was willing to drive to Texas if she wanted me to, with the employers, to people I was in relationships with, the family members. And I remember right after that, I got back from that experience, and, like, my life has taken off since then. Like, all of a sudden, like, I found myself, like, in a really healthy, great relationship that I wasn't even looking for. It just came, and it couldn't have been. And then all of a sudden, like, I found myself, like, I didn't have any more fear of, like, economic insecurity. All of a sudden, like, now I've been able to find myself with the ability to, like, put in a 2 weeks notice at a job and actually leave on good terms and move on to something even better. And the thing is, like, I know that today in my life, none of this would have ever been possible if it wasn't for the program. You know, the people that I've met, you know, like, by getting into service with the Fresno County Young People with Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, like, that was the first, you know, I remember praying to God that God would give me the ability to get into more service, you know? And I remember it wasn't like 2 or 3 days later after I prayed that prayer that somebody I knew was like, hey, yeah, dude, what are you doing today? Sunday, 2 o'clock, you know, share a fellowship. And I was like, huh? And he was like, yeah, you should go over here to this, to the Young People's Committee. You know, at the time, it was his girlfriend. He was like, yeah, she's the chair. You should go over there. It's really cool. You get the service. You can help her out. And I was like, okay, yeah, dude, I'll go over there. And so I went over there, and he wasn't there. It turns out he's not even a part of it. But I showed up anyways, you know, so I prayed the prayer, and the opportunity presented itself, you know? And the thing is, like, as a result of, like, following that readiness indicated step and God working in my life in a miraculous way, I've met some amazing people today that I don't think I would have ever met or had the privilege to know as a result of getting involved in that, you know? And I've been able to travel all over California and be of service and be a part of. You know, just recently, just last weekend, we had the NCCAA conference in Fresno, and I was on the host committee for that. I was the literature chair. And, you know, today in my life, like, I just, like, you know, I have sponsees. I continue to work with my sponsees weekly. I do them once a week. We set a time and a date. I tell them, you don't miss it, I won't miss it. We're doing this, right? And the same thing my sponsor does with me, right? I've been meeting my sponsor weekly for as long as I've met him, you know? And, like, and I, you know, I hold on to my commitment meetings, right? I have meetings that I do, treatment centers, Saturdays, you know, and I just, like, I just do the program the way it's outlined, you know? Because I know from my own experience that if I don't do the program, it gets all bad. If I do the program, it's all good. But the thing is, though, like, there's no limit on how good it can get, right? It's all contingent upon how much work going on, right? As I continue to put more and more and more and more in Alcoholics Anonymous, God continues to bless me with more and more and more and more, you know? And, you know, and that's just it, though, right? You know, we always hear about what our primary purpose is, right? But just recently, I've been meditating on, like, what the book says our real purpose is. Our real purpose tells us that we are to fit ourselves to be of maximum usefulness to God and to our fellow. Real purpose. And so I'm just really grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, for a long time, I tried to duck and dodge the program. I thought I was going to find all these different ways, you know, get inspirational books, you know, think of exercise, you know, start to manage. I was going to find some magic formula that would not have to do the same thing. But now I wish I would have done it a long time ago. But I know that it took what it took to get where I'm at today, and I'm grateful to God for the people that he's placed in my life as a result of being an alcoholic.
you can
you know,
start
I just
to
want
hear
to say, you know, if your life's all messed up and you're in a ton of pain, welcome. There's a solution to all your problems. And
always get some more clap.